Welcome back to Podsite, everyone. This is, of course, Carlo. And today it's just an intimate duo with me and Pete. Pete, how are you doing, man?
I'm all right. How are you, man?
I've been plumbing different timelines for resources. So it came as a shock to me that such a coincidence, Pete, that you recommended this story. Bruce Sterling's Mozart and Mirror Shades, which was anthologized, I believe, it first appeared in Omni magazine.
Yeah.
And then it was also anthologized in the seminal, quote, end quote, Mirror Shades, cyberpunk anthology that everyone knew that Mirror Shades was a thing. So, Bruce went ahead and put it in the title.
Yeah. Yeah. I think everyone during a 1 year period read that short story collection, and that was their dip into cyberpunk.
I mean, you know, in some fairness, like the aesthetics are very cool.
It's honestly a great short story collection. When everybody reads the same thing, I'm a little sad because I love the chaos of interaction and us sharing with each other. And like, it's a difficult collection to talk with to people because they're like, yeah, I read that too. And then what do you say? You know?
I mean, I think it's one of those things that, that perhaps both you and I have slowly begun to sort of grapple with, which is that initially we were those people, you know, like the people is like, so what did you think of the story? Oh, I liked it. It was really cool. And that's it.
Yeah.
No more. There's some thoughts happening behind the eyes, but there's nothing else being said about that.
And in the defense of that approach to stories, like I think that's where everybody should start with a story. Like, am I enjoying this? Is this connecting me on any level? Like that sort of animal initial reflection, I think, is a very worthy thing, and I want people to do it. Like, if you never did that and you're like, okay, well, let's look for metaphor, it's like, well, fuck, dude, you know.
Well, I think it's a question of sort of learning how to read deeper, which can be fulfilling at times, and frustrating a lot too. So you know, in fairness, I think my general idea is that, I mean, God bless them. You know, all those people are just like, the only comment that they have is, yeah, it was cool, I liked it. You know, we absolutely, you know, like if me as a writer, I need people like that because they just like reading, which is itself a very niche thing. I think that I always laugh because it's like one of those Aqua Teen Hunger Force things. It was like talking about reading is from the devil. And besides, TV does it twice as fast. And, you know, I can't, once it's laid out exactly like that, you're like, well, shit. Yeah, you're right. And most people are like, they don't think exactly that sequence of words, but they think more or less the same thing. It's like, well, reading, I can watch TV. I'll wait till they make a movie of it.
Yep. This is a very random discovery about this. Like, if you go out to Bing, and I don't know why you would, but you know, that's my work computer, and you type Mozart in Mirror Shades, like more and more they're trying to do the searching for you, and sometimes it's really stupid. So like, there's a bunch of boxes on my screen, and it's like setting of Mozart and Mirror Shades, plot, external links, reception, and the reception they pop up is co-author Bruce Sterling described it as blah blah blah, and I'm like, that's not a reception. I mean, you don't ask the organizer of the reception how it went.
Like, look, have you never played ball with yourself? Just throw and you catch, and you run over to the other side when you throw, and then you also catch it. I guess it was a lonely day at the review stand or something. Who knows?
Yeah, I mean, it was the first thing that popped up, and they're like, okay, we're going with it.
Yeah. Bruce Sterling has conducted an intense investigation of his own story and found nothing wrong with it.
Exactly.
So anyway, so let's talk a little bit about what this is a story about. And I think actually, you know what, maybe we should just read a little bit from the beginning.
Yeah, let's do that.
Because I think it sort of sets it all up within like a couple of sentences, if not the first paragraph.
Yeah.
So from the hill north of the city, Rice saw 18th century Salzburg spread out below him like a half-eaten lunch. Huge cracking towers and swollen bulbous storage tanks dwarfed the ruins of the St. Rupert Cathedral. Thick white smoke billowed from the refinery's stacks. Rice could taste the familiar petrochemical tang from where he sat, under the leaves of a wilting oak. So, I mean, it's okay. Here we have it. We have, you know, it doesn't become, if it's not clear by now, Rice is not native to 18th century Salzburg, I should say. He is actually from, I suppose, a timeline slightly like, what is it, 5 minutes before, 5 minutes in the future from us or something?
Yeah, exactly. The near now.
Yeah. And so essentially the entire premise of the story is sort of laid out there, right? There's time travel and there's basically you can synchronize with another timeline. They do the expedient thing that you do, right, with time travel, which is that they agree that then it branches off into every time jump actually creates a new branch off the timeline that is not exactly our world.
Mm-hmm.
And so what they've decided to do is, well, you know what, Why don't we just like extract from the planet, but you know, like back in time, and since it's not our planet, they're not doing the old cartoon thing where they cut the rope from above to tie below to climb down. So it's not like they're fucking up their own past and leaving themselves high and dry. They're doing that to other timelines, basically.
Yeah, I mean, like there's an arguably infinite number of these that they can go in and scroodle with. You know, you could get an apartment and you could fill it with, I don't know, copies of Michelangelo's David. Like, there's a million of them out there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, much like my jokes. No.
I got a million of them, folks.
Mm. But so the issue then becomes like one of, obviously the metaphor here is one that is, it's sort of couching it as time travel, but like right off the bat, you sort of get right into like this idea that this is also about like exploitation of the developing world.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and how sort of the money guys will just swoop in and just basically, you know, carve up whatever's not nailed down and ship it back for, you know, money, liquidate as much as they can and just leave a mess.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I just said, yeah, that was the whole thing.
Oh, okay. Right on, dude. No, you have the floor. I will say that thankfully this does not, it sort of balances along this line of something that sort of annoys me sometimes. Especially with like either like alternate history stuff or time travel stuff, because it this one leans pretty heavily on some, you know, some obvious names that we could recognize, right? They meet up with George Jefferson. No, they meet up with Thomas Jefferson. He himself is not moving on up. Sadly, Jefferson is portrayed as sort of like basically an appointed president by this time agency or what have you. They just sort of like forced the English to withdraw and appointed him as first president.
Yeah, he's a puppet.
Mm-hmm. Which, you know, once again, is just sort of, you had an election, did you? Well, have another one until the results are ones we like.
Exactly.
So let me ask you, Pete, why did you choose this one? I mean, I know that perhaps we had talked earlier about you wanting to talk a little bit more about Sterling.
Yeah. Well, I like this one for a couple of reasons. One, I just think it's a good read. Like, I liked it. I read it and I liked it.
But it's cool, man. It's cool. Why?
It's a cool book. What's your problem?
Okay. That's it, folks. That's the episode. Thank you very much.
There you Thanks, go. Pete. Anytime, dude. But I mean, how do I put this? There's this, I think that it was more revelatory when it came out than it is now. And mm-hmm. I think it was less revelatory to you when you read it than it was to me.
Right.
Because one of the big messages of this story is that we are all victims of colonization when we're facing the corporate aesthetic.
Mm-hmm, right.
Like, we're all just food. And
yeah.
I think that is an important message to send, even though, like, let's say you're 25 and you're listening to this, you're probably thinking, well, Pete, no shit. But it was a big revelation to me.
I mean, in 1985, I think that would be that would be sort of, at least in the U.S., if you were not like already some sort of, you know, like rabid leftist, you know, socialist, whatever, you would also be somewhat taken aback by the fact, wait, hold on, we do what now?
Yeah.
Because like, you know, like at that point, what is it? The stuff like the Iran, like the Contras in El Salvador. All these things were reported, but they were just sort of like these weird, like, for me, I was like a teenager, so I didn't really understand exactly what was happening. It seemed complicated. And partly it seemed complicated in part because the news makes it seem more complicated than it actually is. You know, if they told everyone, hey, there's, you know, Reagan decided to send death squads down there because they didn't like, you know, they didn't like the turn towards like social democracy.
Yeah, in the price area. Of bananas might go up.
Well, I mean, yes, absolutely, amongst other things. And you just can't have that. So you gotta go down there and kill, you know, just massacre people left and right until they get it through their thick heads that, you know, America understands what you need. Stop trying to do things for yourself.
Exactly. God damn.
But I mean, like, I think even within like 6 years' time after this came out, like with the fall of like the Soviet Union and just the incredible fleecing that happened there, I think it just slowly starts to, you know, it starts to become less speculative and just straight up fiction. Not even fiction at that point. It's just sort of allegory or something to that effect, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, pretty much. And I mean, the other thing about this is that it is, I mean, it's obviously horrible. Like you read this and it's just like, fuck. But it's also fun. Mm-hmm. I mean, like, considering it's describing a horror, and it's a horror that you can like close your eyes and picture yourself in right now. It's also like The whole idea of, like, going back in time and exploiting the French Revolution and banging Marie Antoinette and, going out for pizza with Mozart. I mean, it works on a couple of levels, and some of them, like, don't bear close scrutiny, but that makes them no less compelling.
Right. No. I mean, I think it's more of a pet peeve of mine regarding, like, just name dropping, right? But
Oh, yeah.
I fully understand why you need to do it, because you need to have, like, stuff that, like, jump out at, people who, don't really don't people who think that they're getting, like, actual information from their science fiction.
Sure.
I mean, and I'm not trying to be mean, but, like, I've fallen into that category myself, where you think, oh yeah, this is factual, or
Sure.
I learned, like, I would say that one of the things that is sort of like a, I think it's like one of these little calling cards that science fiction stories tend to have, is to present you with some new information, sort of layered into the story, right? And so you come away thinking that you learn something new and were entertained because it was cool, man.
Yes. Well, I mean, have you ever seen the what Yahoo Serious Young Einstein?
I don't think I ever saw it.
Oh God, dude. Like, it is the worst idea for a movie ever, but it's basically about a hip young Einstein developing relativity as a way to put bubbles into beer for the first time. And somebody figures out how to use it for nuclear weapons. Like, it's so massively and obviously ahistorical, but
Well, first off, he's also from Australia, isn't
right. Yeah,
he?
he's from Australia. But I mean, like, I remember watching it. I think this was, like, in the late 80s, and getting really mad because I'm like, someone in this theater believes this.
I mean, maybe, yeah.
Maybe, yeah. Like, somebody did somewhere, but I mean, like, that's definitely that is a low risk example of what we're talking about, but it's definitely the example I think of.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely one of those things that I have noticed in how a lot of science fiction stories get written, is exactly that. Like, they layer in some facts into a story and then, sort of wing the rest.
Right.
But anyway, I did rather enjoy sort of like the person in the title, Wolfgang Mozart, actually sort of decides to switch teams. He's like, fuck this. He could tell that there's money, so fuck all this shit. I want to go into the future. Can I get there? Because I don't want to compose any fucking music.
Yeah, it's already been done by some other version of me. Screw that.
That was sort of funny and unexpected, but also, like, you go, oh, so he's just like a complete pragmatist. He's sort of like exactly the type of personality that this sort of neoliberal speculative fiction premise would devise, right?
Oh yeah.
They
Well, I mean, if you're gonna do cyberpunk.
Oh yeah, absolutely. But I do love that he's like, who is it? He's also like, he's wearing the mirror shades. Yes, he is. But he's also like, he's got like a little bit of a punk aesthetic, right?
Yep.
Scooter, the mirror shades, the leather jacket. He's at a weird dive bar. It works. I think it sort of works, and it sort of captures not only, like, that edginess that a lot of cyberpunk has, but also contains some like goofy mashing together of different aesthetics within the umbrella of cyberpunk, right?
He's actually a lot more interesting than the main character.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, the main character does not do a growth.
He did bodies in spaces, bodies in time spaces.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's like he went back in time to exploit. He was very upfront about it. He berates Thomas Jefferson about it, and when everything goes to hell, he just rolls with it. Like there's no change to him at all whatsoever. And it's probably the weakest part of the story is that the main character is someone you emphatically don't give a shit about. But I do believe it was a conscious choice and a fun, risky one.
Oh, yes. I mean, let's face it. Like this is sort of the same. I can see this being sort of the same type of character arc that, Jordan Belfort in The Wolf of Wall Street has,
yep.
Which is none, absolutely no fucking arc. It's a straight fucking line or a circle if you want to get, technical. You know, he just sort of goes back to the beginning and he's still doing the same thing. Why? Like, honestly, Rice is someone who keeps on sort of like staying on top. Through like a combination of the system that he's working in sort of propping him up, but also just some, low cunning and figuring out exactly who's got an angle on who and making sure that, that he's going to be safe, at least have an exit plan of some sort, which he does.
Absolutely.
So yeah, he's the perfect. He's like sort of the perfect operative, right? He's just sort of like there. He's there to fleece and extract, and he's upfront about it. I'm sure that he thinks that is a principled position, just telling you to your face. Yeah, I'm gonna just like take everything from you.
Yeah.
Good luck with that. But it's that type of thing. I think it's one of those characters that would not fly right now, in a lot of fiction because people want their character. Like I feel like there's a large, but maybe not so large, maybe a middling to small group that is very vocal that does not want to have anyone portrayed in portray any bad things happening. It's like, well, I mean, sorry.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. It's hard to parse down for me because, like, I do prefer when authors cleverly lean towards readability. You know what I mean? Like, there is something to be said for a character that you want to read more about. Like, I don't think that's a crazy choice.
Pete, let me throw just a quick suggestion at you.
Okay.
What if we added emojis into the text after every sentence so you knew exactly how to feel about it?
Oh, that's perfect.
Like a little smiley face. Maybe there's a grimace face, I don't know. Maybe that would help. I'm not entirely sure,
Anything's worth trying, I guess.
I suppose. I did find it like it's fun. It's got like a certain wooliness to it, like the once things go to hell, they go to hell really fast.
Yeah. Yeah. That, and in a fun way too.
Oh, absolutely. But I will also say that, that to his credit, I will say that Sterling does not do the somewhat annoying cyberpunky thing where everything sort of is sort of accelerates right at the end and you get sort of like a somewhat abrupt ending of some sort. I feel like this has a nice balance to it, if you will. The way the story itself is structured and paced. So there is that. I do appreciate that quite a lot. I do love that he's like basically sleeping with Marie Antoinette, and it becomes clear that they've headed off the French Revolution at the pass.
Yep.
Because it's messy. You don't want anything messy to mess with your profit margins, you know?
Yeah. No, that wasn't done out of desire to preserve anything but profit margins.
Oh, they did want to pervert it, but
yes,
pervert history, but not in the cool way.
Yeah. That not in the way we all hope for.
Yeah. But yeah, I did find that to be somewhat amusing. Like, what is it? Also, like Marie Antoinette also wants the same thing that Mozart wants, who insists on being called Wolf instead of Wolfgang.
Yeah.
I love that. Was it Toinette pouted? I want the modern food. The pizza and burritos and the chicken fried.
Yeah, like the chicken fried is a phrase that is going to stay in my head until I'm dying. It's chef's wondrous. Kiss. Yes.
Like, honestly, it's chef's kiss. When Rice shrugged, she threw her arms around his neck. You love me, Rice? Love you, baby. I love the very idea of you. He was drunk on history, out of control, careening under him like some great black motorcycle of the imagination. When he thought of Paris, take out quiche to go stores springing up where guillotines might have been, a six-year-old Napoleon munching double bubble in Corsica, he felt like the Archangel Michael on speed. Megalomania, he knew, was an occupational hazard, but he'd get back to work soon enough in just a few more days. So yeah, he's having a weird drug infused sex orgy thing right in the middle of this. It's like he decided to have the freak out in Apocalypse Now in the middle of the story.
Exactly. Yeah, well, and I mean, it's like that's got to be a part of all of this. Like, it's one thing to say, well, you know, they come in and they take all these things. It's the whole idea of getting the workers in. Like, what's going to attract them in? Well, I mean, you get to exploit history. That's insane.
I mean, all for the promise of the chicken fried.
Yes, indeed. Well, I keep thinking about that propaganda officer. You know who I'm talking about? Where?
What was his name? Yeah, I know who you're talking about. His fucking name is.
Where it's like, look, Rice is like, I'm going to go out and have some fun, and his manager is like, well, look, you can't keep, you know, giving the stuff out and stuff, and he's like, well, what about this officer? Da 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 da, and he's like, well, you know, we can't do anything. He gets to go out and you know wear the spangly outfits and stuff because he's too connected into the company, you know. It's like, yeah, uh-huh. I know that world.
But yeah, I rather enjoyed this quite a bit. And, I love that, they have to leave because I guess you can only forestall a revolution so long.
Yeah. Yeah, it did. Well, the thing is that the other argument is that there were people on the team that wanted the revolution to happen. Like there was definitely, you know, there was definitely help for the revolution on the inside, which is, to be fair, very typical.
What? A giant bureaucratic entity having internal conflicts and contradictions?
Slow amongst, down.
Amongst rival, departments? What crazy world is this? Sounds like a dystopia, mister.
Exactly.
Yeah. So, I mean, honestly, it's a rather good story. I think it's to your point, Pete, that like reading it in 2024, you know, like what is it now? Almost 40 years. It's like, what is it? 39 years after the fact, when this type of thing has become like, it's no longer, you know, fiction really.
Yeah.
It's just sort of like business, what we do. That like it doesn't feel, I'm sure it absolutely steals, you know, whatever shock it might have, but it you know, for what it's worth, I think Sterling is a rather good writer. I don't know that he has a style that is, you know, super, super cool for me, but it's readable, and he doesn't do a lot of bad things with how he writes. So it's all good. I think my main issue with Sterling is the stuff that I've read of his feels so close to the jagged edge of near future that we're almost catching up to it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And it feels like this isn't fun anymore. I'm reading about the real world.
Yeah. I think there is,
I mean, at least the cyberpunk and cyberpunk adjacent stuff. I can't speak to like his space opera stuff that he's, you know, like the stuff that got the story that got adapted for like Love, Death and Robots or whatever.
Or Schismatrics. Yeah. And all that stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So maybe that'll be more fun to read. I'll get to it eventually, I suppose. Or we could always have another story of his from those stories.
Well, and I think that was sort of his goal, was like when he wrote this sort of stuff, is to have it feel just around the corner. And mm-hmm. the cost of that is that you turn the fucking corner, right?
Yep. I mean, I think that the funny thing is that for all that people complain about Gibson sort of doing this, pulling the same stunt with the last, you know, couple of books.
Mm-hmm.
I do think that it felt much more almost playful on his part. Like he was making the current moment cyberpunk rather than sort of making cyberpunk more gritty and of the moment.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Yeah, no, that makes a ton of sense to me. So I was hearing some sort of some tune in the background. Very tinny.
Yes, it's my cheerful, very, very happy to serve dryer who lets me know.
Oh,
with a little song.
Wow, you know what mine does?
you give me flashbacks to losing at Joust in the arcade beat. That goddamn pterodactyl.
You know, I've got Joust in my house now, man.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, I got
one.
You
mean the arcade game, not like you've decided to make your house into medieval times. Yeah.
I hop on Chewie's back with a big stick and I charge.
I mean, Chewie, in fairness, Chewie would be a battle hound in D&D.
Oh, yeah, or a Mabari in Dragon Age, for sure. But I got one of those stand-up arcade games with like 60 video games in it, and like mm-hmm. I know you can make one yourself with 30 million games in it and stuff, but screw that. I would much rather pay and take 20 minutes to assemble it, right? So I now have a quarter insert arcade machine in my house that I will never use.
you had it. Wait, you left it with the quarter insert?
No, but like it looks like one is my point.
That's particularly masochistic, Pete, because like, why wouldn't you just set it to nothing? Just play.
But you know, I'm gonna spend 3 weeks playing like Gauntlet and Joust and Tempest and all of that. We know exactly what's gonna happen. I will walk away from it at some point and that will be it. And I'm just mm-hmm. like so frustrated by that, man, because like I'd have given my soul for this thing when I was like 10.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I feel you. Like, it's one of those things where it was one of those like dreams where you would like still, you know, you were like all of 12, you know, you were like almost an adult man, but you like you'd get it into your head and you'd wish so hard. I wish I could get that fucking arcade. I watched. Did you ever watch Starcade?
Say more.
So Starcade was I think it lasted maybe 2 years.
So it was like a game show?
It was like a game show, but it was like basically a game show with you could play like timed, you were timed and you could play like, you know, whatever video games, like arcade games they had. So, you know, Burger Time, Millipede, that type of thing, you know.
Sure. Okay.
But the prizes were usually like you would win one of the cabinets. You know, like that was like the grand prize. And I was like, man, that would be so cool.
This is the best thing ever.
And yeah, it's really cool because the issue is you don't think about just how quickly you get tired of whatever super cool thing you were waiting for all year to get for Christmas. And within a, you know, like within a month or so, you're like, okay, I've played enough with this.
Yeah, we've reached the end.
You know, it but looks, don't you dare take it away either. Fuck you.
It looks like Alex Trebek was the host. That's amazing.
Really?
Yeah.
You know, I didn't even really register that. I mean, in fairness, I think I didn't register it because I didn't know who Alex Trebek was at 12 or 13 or whatever.
I guess that wouldn't have been as big a deal at the time, right?
Not particularly, no. Like, okay, guy with big curly helmet of hair, thick ass mustache.
So we got a problem, Carlo. We've mined out this story.
We extracted it.
Yeah,
that's the problem.
That's it. So like we could have a shorter episode. We could talk about random shit. We could talk about something else. What do you want to do, King?
I think we've already been talking about random shit. So let's continue on that trajectory.
Okay, fair enough.
Yeah. So let me just officially say, folks out there, if you're still listening, we love you. This is the end of us talking anything even tangentially about the story. So if that was what you were here for, thank you very much. You don't have to listen anymore, but we'd like you to stay.
Here on Podside.
On Podside. But yeah. why are you trying to steal my logging off?
I know you're going to do it at the end, so I figured I'd do it here for the levers, you know.
Hey-o. Man, so I don't know about you. It's funny that you mentioned like the arcade cabinet and all that stuff, because for whatever reason, recently, Pete, I've been like doing a little, sort of like watching these YouTube videos of playthroughs of old video games. You know, like, have you ever done this? Like you played this one game and you remember what it was and first off, I didn't remember, like there was one called Alien Syndrome, which I believe was like a Sega game that I used to play and get so frustrated at the arcade because it was very difficult.
Gotcha.
And in any case, the point is that, you know, like some of these arcade games that I'd never finished or even gotten anywhere close, because I was just not very good at that type of thing at the time.
I'm with you there.
And so now I've gotten into the habit of like, oh, let me look up, you know, what was this old arcade game, you know, like a playthrough. And it's sort of sad. Like, I think I'd mentioned it before, like something like Dragon's Lair, who you would wait all week to have like enough, like $5 just to have like maybe 2 minutes on that stupid arcade game.
Oh God, it was a monster.
I loved it dearly with the Don Bluth animation and everything. Have you ever watched the playthrough?
No, I haven't. I mean, I remember enough of it from my childhood. I've died so many different ways.
Do you, Pete, let me ask you, would you hazard a guess as to how long a perfect game lasts?
23 minutes.
That is way off. It is much more than what it is. I don't remember right off the bat, but I do believe that it is between 8 to 11 minutes long.
Oh my God.
And that stupid machine milked so much money out of so many pockets. It's terrible. It's 12, it's so awful.
12 minutes.
12 minutes. Okay. Fair enough. I was just a little bit under it. It's dismaying, isn't it?
Yeah, I hate knowing that.
Sorry,
incredible.
Man.
No, it's not your fault. It's the world we're in. Mm-hmm. What was your favorite game?
Arcade?
Yeah.
I had like these really off the wall ones that I got really attached to. Did you ever play the Nintendo Popeye one?
No, that's awesome.
It's really cool. I mean, it's essentially a reskinned version of like the Super Mario Brothers arcade game.
Yeah.
So it's got like the same sort of structure, like the level, like jumping and all that stuff, but it's sort of like repurposed for Popeye. So, it was a lot of fun to play because like at the time, like the animation was sufficiently close to the actual, like what the characters look like. It was
Yeah.
fun. Yeah.
No, that's very cool. I think my two were Sinistar, if you ever played that one.
Oh God, that one I played like maybe twice and it scared the crap out of me. When it starts
Run,
like,
coward.
yes, because it had like two speakers right up top. It would like
Yes.
just blast out the space devil's voice at you.
Oh, it's
Yeah.
so cool.
It's psych you the fuck out.
Oh, yeah,
You're like,
like.
oh no.
It's like asteroids with something chasing you, and the something chasing you is easily the best part. And
Yeah,
then
it's like if Asteroids had Jason, but he's also like weirdly both the devil and the Death Star at once.
yeah, that's the other one I was really into was Wizard of War.
I don't think I've played that one.
It's not particularly good. It's a midway one, and it's mazes with monsters in it, and you're wandering through, but it had sort of a D&D vibe,
Okay.
and that was enough for me to be hooked.
Pete, you don't have to tell me twice.
Oh yeah.
I mean, I played like all those silly coin op Dungeons and Dragons games that I could find,
Oh
I mean,
yeah.
even including like something like Golden Axe, which is not,
Yeah. Or Gauntlet.
trademarked. Yeah, Gauntlet too. Yeah, I love
Oh
Gauntlet.
man. I have it now. You should come over.
I was in fact, the coincidence was that I was watching a playthrough of Gauntlet earlier today. I was like, oh, just watch what that looks like. It is very funny to watch how sort of like simple a lot of these games are. And a lot of it was just simply that they were like just insanely difficult. Like they would throw everything they could at you.
Yeah. Well, and
But yeah, anyway.
I've definitely noticed that I am considerably slower than I ever was. Like playing these games now, I mean, it's not just that it's been a long time and I don't have the muscle memory and all of that. It is just I was faster at 10 than I am at 50, and it's really obvious.
Well, I mean, let's face it, Pete, you have several decades of second guessing yourself in between.
Yeah, that's true. That self-doubt is important.
Yep, sure is, as an adult at least.
Exactly.
But yeah, man. Also, I know someone in the Discord chat's ears are just going to start like ringing because I'm going to mention Ultima. You ever play that? Like,
Oh, I
that's
thought
not
you
an
were going to be
arcade
like,
game.
Kindle shot the food, but
No. No, I know that Frank was a big Ultima 6 fan, so
Oh.
I never got, I think I tried to get Ultima 6 and it never really clicked with me. Or something happened. Maybe I just found friends and I wasn't at home just playing computers all the time.
I was really into 6 and 7, and my big thing was the potions. Did I ever tell you about that?
The reagents or whatever, yeah.
Well, I mean, there were actually potions lying around, and they were all like color based. Like the way you figured out what they were, and they actually got labeled as you drank one.
Sounds good, especially if
Yeah.
it's poison.
Right. Oh, yeah. There was a poison one. There was a sleep one. So you drink the sleep one and you're like flat on your back. But at some point you figure out that you could like you select a potion, and the idea is you could pick a member of your party to do it to. But it doesn't have to be a member of your party. It can be anything in the game. And so like I'd walk up to a dragon and just like have a sleep potion, motherfucker.
How very trusting of that dragon to be like, oh yes, I will try that
Exactly. And you just wander around behind him and you take all his stuff. It's
for you.
fantastic.
He's like, yeah, yes, tip it more. Sometimes the poison's at the end.
Just madness. Yeah, but I did really enjoy that game, and it was definitely the first game I really got into the concept of like walking into a town and like looting the gold vault.
And then being chased,
Oh, yeah,
like swarmed by the burly ass, sprited, like guards.
All of them
were like huge.
It's like, boy, it's a real shame that there's three different ways to teleport in this game.
You know? Whoops.
See ya.
Yeah, it is sort of funny to also get like in the earlier games, I think you could get something like the horse or whatever, and it did like twice the movement, so you'd eventually just like outrun. You just see like a swarm of guards after you, and you slowly losing if you knew exactly how to get out.
Yeah.
Because if you like got a little turned around or whatever and got, oh shit, cornered against a wall, and that was the end of your party. that was where
much.
You went back to the last save.
Oh, and then that lunatic, what was his name? Lord British.
I mean, he has British right in the name.
It is hard to overemphasize how crazy that dude was in real life.
Oh, I sort of like Pete. I made a joke, but granted, I don't know what he's. I seem to remember that there was something not so great recently that happened to him. But like if for the most part, like the tech bros that we had now were all sort of like in the mold of Lord British. Like all they do is like, oh, I built like a, I converted my weird mansion in, you know, the California hills into having secret passages so I can go to a throne room or whatever and wear my cape. And you're like, that, see, that's, you do you. That doesn't seem to harm anybody, you know?
Oh, exactly. Oh, I have good news about Richard Garriott. He's working on a new fantasy MMO. You'll never guess what it uses. NFTs.
Oh boy, that's the one. Hey, there we go. We knew we had to get to it.
Oh, I'm so excited.
I had an idea. Let me pitch it to you. A fantasy story all about, like, could you imagine how much space Smaug would have had in that Dwarven Hall to do all sorts of interesting things if all of his hoard had been Bitcoin?
Oh, God.
He could have put a skate park in there. He could have put like a nice little soaking pool
for himself.
It would
not have been possible to rob him.
There you go. Oh, his neck missed the cup. Which cup, motherfucker? It's an NFT of a cup.
Oh,
see,
God,
and that's where Smaug points a claw at his head, you know, to show how smart he is. but yeah. For you see, Mr. Underhill and Barrel Jumper, you cannot rob me.
Such a good show. Handbook.
Well, you're talking about the animated one, yes?
I just saw that 2 weeks ago.
Oh, the Rankin Bass one?
Yeah, cool. Yeah. Well, saw it again. I mean, let's be real. I saw it you know.
Dude, that don't tell me that riff that they have for the Goblin Town, that shit is right.
Yes.
That heavy bass with the guah pedal and everything. It's so good. Scary too. Scary. Like honestly, a couple of scenes there where it's just like flashes on, strobes in on the orcs. See, these were the orcs that I used to like. That's how I imagined them. Like,
oh, yeah.
Sort of like weirdly squat and huge tusks.
Well, and as a kid, perfect.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And yeah, they, in a pinch, they were also what I imagined Grues to be, except that they were just not made of light. You couldn't see them.
Yeah, fair. So Grues is in Zork?
Yeah, Zork.
Nice. I didn't know you were a Zorkhead back in the day. Me too.
What? Yeah. Pete, come on now. You are east of the White House. There is something in the mailbox.
Oh my God, that was so much fun.
It was such a Pete, didn't you find it such a weird conglomeration of different things in there that felt like that made perfect sense when you were playing it, but like, wait, there's an inflatable boat? No, but because it's a Frobo's magic boat.
Right. See? Yeah, I mean, like, it was definitely, it had its own set of world laws. Like, it didn't, mm-hmm. like, if you took anything from there and you dumped it into another game, you'd be like, okay, that's stupid.
Yes. But weirdly, it seemed to work in this. Yeah, it's just, what a series of games. I mean, this is really like Zork. And all those Infocom games, I genuinely had like a super, what do you call it? Like, I was super loyal to the brand of Infocom because it was like reading, but it was a game.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It was just so cool.
No, I totally agree. The Zorks were the ones that got me the most, but like Planetfall, all of those really. Mm-hmm. Got me.
Which of the Zorks did you like the best? I mean, how far into Zork did you get?
Three.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think I did Zork Zero, and then when they
Didn't finish Zork Zero, but I played a little, I think.
Oh, interesting. That was the one where the gimmies in that one were really, really nice looking. Like they had like their little bestiary and like with really cool line art, you know, and stuff like that. And I remember being like, ooh, an Urgru. That was one of the like that's the big bad in the game.
Oh, okay. That's awesome.
But yeah, like once they started getting into more graphical stuff, I sort of stayed away for a while. And then what was the other one? I forget if it's like Beyond Zork or one of the early ones of that had a little bit of graphics, but not a lot. But yeah, after that, it's sort of like, I went, what was your first Infocom game? Was it all just Zork?
Yeah, it was Zork straight up.
I think my first one was actually Enchanter because, you know, it had wizards in it.
Oh, of course. Yeah, no, like we were subject to the same bait vulnerabilities.
Oh, absolutely. Like, yeah, and that one was pretty challenging. I never got to finish the other two. Hmm. So one of these days, maybe I'll they're available to play, but only, I think, in the browser, so it's like really it's a roll of the dice.
Oh, and you got to do it beginning to end too.
Yes, exactly right. Exactly right. You have to remember exactly what the puzzles all are too.
That sucks.
Yes, it's terrible. But you know, it is. I guess that's the price you pay for having someone having, you know, like stored them online somewhere. You know.
Yeah, I'm grateful they did it all. Like, I'm not really bitching. It's just like I want it perfect. Damn it.
It's true. It's true. I mean, there's a more recent because like I think there is like an entire series of conventions that revolve around interactive fiction. Still, you know that, right? Like that's a going thing still in our the year of our Lord 2024. I think they are what is the command from the original adventure is ZZG something something. I forget exactly what.
Oh man, I don't remember.
that's the name of the, I believe, the convention. Anyway, I'll remember it later. I'm not going to look it up now. Fuck it. Anyway, I think, yeah, we've talked some random shit too, mostly about games. So.
Yeah, no, I think we're there, man.
I think we could call it. So if you've stuck by, listener, thank you for that. Hope that was entertaining. But in any case, Pete, thanks again, man. You know, like this was honestly, it was a good read. I just wish that we had a little bit more.
Yeah, we should have read two things, man. Now we know.
It's
the
all
backup
good,
story.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of tough sometimes when it's something that is, it is what it is. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, well, I mean, and yeah, the thing is, this wasn't a short story that you and I were going to come into conflict on. I'm like, I don't even think that's possible.
No, this is a good story. I mean, I have, you know, like I said, I had my annoyances, but they're mostly like pet peeves of me, you know.
Sure.
It's not, yeah, you know, it's not.
I mean, at the end of the day, you read this and we're in the same place, which it's good. It's a good read. I enjoyed reading.
I liked it. Yeah, it was cool, man.
And all on right. That note.
Yeah, this is a cool episode, Pete. Thanks.
Yeah, it was all good. Right.
Yep. Well, everyone out there, I think I hope that you think it's as good as that. So thanks again, and we'll catch you next time here on Podside. Del piso del escenario, nos ponemos para las fotos.